Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. In the 1990s, then Georgia Congressman Bob Barr was front and center as a fire-breathing Republican revolutionary, leading the charge to impeach Bill Clinton and drive the Democrats into oblivion. In 2002, he lost his seat. In 2006, he left the GOP. Now, Bob Barr is the 2008 Libertarian Party nominee for the presidency, and he's looking to drive Republicans from power because, he says, they've become a threat to liberty. GOP leaders fear he could help tip the race to Obama. This hour on Point, Bob Barr, Libertarian for President. Bob Barr officially announced his candidacy for president in a YouTube video posted May 11th. He was nominated by the Libertarian Party on May 25th. Here he is in his official YouTube announcement.
This is Bob Barr, and I'm a candidate for the presidency of the United States of America because liberty needs a voice and America needs a choice. Americans need a choice to send a message to Washington that no longer will we stand idly by while billions of our dollars are squandered overseas in operations with no point and no end in sight.
Joining me now from Atlanta is Bob Barr. He served in the House of Representatives from 1995 to 2003, led the charge against President Clinton in the 1998 impeachment trials. He was a party-line conservative, voting for the war in Iraq, for the Patriot Act, and more, but his views have changed considerably since leaving Congress. He joined the Libertarian Party in 2006. He's now the Libertarian nominee for president. Bob Barr, great to have you with us today.
Tom, it's great to be with you and your listeners. Thank you for having me.
Barack Obama's down in your state, Georgia, today, but you're not at his party. What's up? Why not?
Well, I'm busy running my own campaign, or actually not running it, but doing what my campaign manager and the rest of our campaign staff here tell me to do. But I'm delighted that he's here in Atlanta, and because it's important for the people in Atlanta and in other cities to see, meet, feel, touch, listen to, and ask questions of all of the candidates, whether it's the Democrat, the Republican, or in my case, the Libertarian nominee.
Bob Barr, you were such a prominent Republican. Why did you, of all people, leave the GOP?
It really was more a question of why did the GOP leave Bob Barr and many other libertarian-leaning conservatives, who, as Ronald Reagan said many years ago, are really the heart and soul of the conservative movement, libertarianism. The fact of the matter is that the Republican Party of this still new 21st century has veered so sharply from the libertarian roots, the true conservative roots of the Republican Party of many years ago, and of the party that I worked with for many, many years, including my service in the Congress, that I, as a libertarian-leaning Republican at the time, could no longer support the party. The party has become a party of big government, maybe not quite as big government as a Democrat, but big government. And more than anything else, Tom, it was the manner in which the Republican Party had completely discarded the notion of individual liberty and privacy in favor of omnipotent government power, whether it's wiretapping or denigrating habeas corpus or a whole range of issues like that, that the party left me. And in looking for a vehicle to channel my my political energies, to me the choice was very clear. The Libertarian Party is not only America's oldest and largest third party, but the only one that really champions consistently in word and deed the notion of minimizing government power and maximizing individual liberty, to me, which is the most mainstream of all political philosophies in our country.
Now we've got this Zogby poll out, Bob Barr, that shows Barack Obama leading John McCain 44% to 38%, a 6% spread there. It also finds that you are polling 6% support around the country. Republicans are saying that you may be the spoiler in this race. You may be the Ralph Nader to John McCain's candidacy. Is that why you're in it? Could that be the effect?
It's certainly not why I'm in it, and I sort of get a kick out of the way in which the Republicans are already making excuses for losing the election, and we're months out of the election. They haven't even had their convention yet. excuse me. and they're already looking for people or notions to blame their defeat on. To me, that's a very weak position for the Republican Party to be in, to all of a sudden, 4 months out from the election, be blaming Bob Barr. The fact of the matter is, with regard to the Republicans, the problems that they face go much, much deeper than Bob Barr or any one person. The Republican Party is very much now a political party that has no vision whatsoever, no leadership, no agenda, no program that they can really take to the American people. And that's why they're doing so poorly in the polls, whether it's President Bush's numbers, the congressional numbers, Senator McCain's inability to really catch fire in this campaign. In our campaign, BobBarr2008.com, what we're trying to do is to remind the American people that they really do have a choice, that the deep, deep dissatisfaction reflected in poll after poll of the American people that reflects a dissatisfaction with the entire political system not serving the American people well is largely the result of this stilted status quo limiting two-party system that we have. And Americans need a choice. And one of the main reasons, in addition to trying to win this election in a competitive three-way race, that I am in this race and why the Libertarian Party cares so deeply about these issues, is to open up the political system to get the American people to realize that they don't have to go into the polling booth year after year and just vote for the lesser of two evils. We want to give them a real positive choice, somebody that will really talk about the constitutional issues and really work to cut to cut government spending and the size of the government.
Republicans have reportedly, even by you, have come to you and said, Bob, get out of this race, please. How do they put that request? How do they frame it? What do they say to you?
Well, not many of them have done that, but certainly some have. Some of my former colleagues and some of them my friends in the Republican Party. It's very interesting, Tom, the way they approached me. Not one person in the Republican Party or former Republican has approached me and said, Bob, please don't run because the Republicans have a great program, a great candidate. Your ideas are not resonating. Your ideas are not the right ideas. There's no good reason for you to be in this race. Please don't do this. On the contrary, what every person that has approached me from the Republican side of the aisle and either before my nomination urged me not to seek it or since then to somehow drop out of the race or whatnot, every one of those Republicans has approached me and said, Bob, we understand why you're doing this. We actually agree with you. We don't like the where the Republican Party is or where it's going, or we're not excited by the candidacy of Mr. McCain. But please don't run anyway because, we have this two-party system and we need to put the Republican in as opposed to the Democrat. Again, that illustrates to me the bankruptcy of the two-party system and the problem that the Republican Party is facing. In other words, even Republicans recognize that there is no positive reason to be out there fighting for their candidate and fighting for their agenda because there is no agenda other than, we have to defeat the Democrat. That's the sum total, basically, of the Republican platform right now.
We're going to look at your libertarian platform, your libertarian critique of current U.S. policy, of the GOP, of the Bush administration. But John McCain is standing there, and he's saying very loudly to the Republican base in recent months, here I am a conservative, I'm your conservative, come to me. Do you see it? Do you buy it, Bob Barr?
Clearly, John McCain is no conservative any more than George W. Bush is. Now, they can say it all they want. I mean, President Bush came up with this this ridiculous notion of a compassionate conservative, and which nobody can ever really define, other than it seems to mean big government conservative. But John McCain's signature piece of legislation, with which he staked his senatorial reputation and is a name that will follow him in my view, into infamy, is the McCain-Feingold Campaign Finance Reform Act. This is the most unconservative piece of federal legislation which empowers big government to squelch free speech, to squelch political activity in our nation's history, probably. And so nobody that supported McCain-Feingold, much less authored it, can legitimately lay claim to being conservative, plus the fact in a number of other areas. Senator McCain is a strong supporter of the continued occupation of Iraq. Using the U.S. military to occupy foreign lands and to nation build is certainly not something that is consistent with traditional views of conservatism in this country. Moreover, when Senator McCain talks about earmarks, which he speaks about very eloquently, he basically uses that as a facade to hide the fact that he's not really talking about any major cuts in government spending. He's simply talking about nibbling at the edges. The true conservative would be out there arguing, as Ronald Reagan did, against the Department of Education, against other government programs, and work to defeat them, not just nibble at the edges.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with former GOP firebrand, now Libertarian Party presidential nominee, Bob Barr. He joins us from Atlanta. 1998, Bob Barr front and center in efforts to impeach Bill Clinton over the Lewinsky scandal. Accused Clinton of putting himself above the law. Here he is, December 11th, 1998, at a House Judiciary Committee debate.
I believe the case we are discussing today is but a small manifestation of President Clinton's utter and complete disregard for the rule of law. Throughout his presidency, his administration has been so successful at thwarting investigations and obstructing the work of Congress and the courts that it may be decades before history reveals the vastness of his abuse of power or the extent of the damage it has wrought.
Now Bob Barr has criticized President Bush for being worse for the country than he says Bill Clinton was. Here he is on the web television show Mob Logic TV, speaking out against George Bush on June 20th, 08.
George W. Bush has, to my mind, done such damage to the very notion of freedom and liberty and the privacy of the individual in our society, and has worked so much to increase government power, systemic government power over the individual.
Bob Barr joins us from Atlanta. Bob Barr, justify that statement. George Bush is a great big threat to American liberty. How do you see it?
President Bush and his cabinet, particularly some of his attorneys general, such as the former Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez, have said very clearly in word and in deed that if the president believes that he is acting as the commander-in-chief, which is an authority that he has in Article 2 of the Constitution, then any decision he makes in that capacity as commander-in-chief, as he sees it and as he defines it, is not reviewable. In other words, if the president decides that even in the face of a law such as our Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act law dating from 1978, which dictates the circumstances and the procedures under which the U.S. government is able to electronically eavesdrop on
FISA,
people, including U.S. citizens,
then
the president can ignore that, as this president has done, not going to the court for warrants that the law requires. This is very, very dangerous because it attacks the basic notion and underpinning of our constitutional form of government that relies on separation of powers, limited powers, and respect for the rule of law. Habeas corpus is another example. Former Attorney General Gonzalez appeared about a year and a half ago before the Senate of the United States and said our Constitution doesn't reflect a fundamental guarantee of habeas corpus, and this is the position also that the Bush administration argued in the recent case that the Supreme Court decided against the administration's position with regard to a habeas corpus for a persons detained at the U.S. base at Guantanamo.
You've called this administration a threat to constitutional conservative government, but surely the Republican Party at large, most Republicans wouldn't want to be a threat to the Constitution. How do you explain what's going on here? For that matter, how do you explain your own votes in favor of any number of the things you're now so critical of, the war, the Patriot Act, and on down the line?
Part of it has to do with the way this administration has manipulated the laws and resolutions passed by Congress. Take, for example, the USA Patriot Act. When the USA Patriot Act was presented to us at the time I was in the Congress, right after 9/11, it was presented as a very specific piece of legislation to address, and as the administration assured us, would be used only for important cases involving terrorism. That is, the additional powers to obtain evidence were necessary to fight terrorism, and that's the context in which they would be used. The administration did make some changes to the original Patriot Act in response to my and other members' requests to them. But what has happened after the Patriot Act went into effect, and a number of us voted for it based on the circumstances at the time and assurances from the administration that it would not be abused or expanded, and we also incorporated sunset provisions in the Patriot Act so that we could properly go back later and relook at them to make sure that they were continued to be justified and were being used properly. To me, that's a very legitimate, very conservative, in a way, power of the Congress to go back and relook at these things periodically. What has happened with the Patriot Act is the administration did not live up to its commitments. It began using the powers in the Act for cases that had nothing whatsoever to do with terrorism. It immediately sought to expand those powers, and it refused and continues to refuse to report properly to the Congress on how these provisions are being used. So, therefore, I have led the effort over the last 5 years to undo many of those provisions in the Patriot Act. With regard to the Iraq resolution, when that was presented to the Congress in 2002, it was presented certainly not as an occupation resolution. Quite to the contrary, it was presented as a resolution that had a very specific, very limited purpose based on what we found out later to be improper intelligence, but based on, even if one assumes the intelligence at the time was appropriate, to move against Iraq, which posed, according to the administration, a very real and present threat to the United States. But it was not presented as what it's turned out to be, and that is a justification for a multi-year, perhaps multi-decade, occupation of a foreign nation.
If you're elected Libertarian nominee Bob Barr, what would you do on Iraq policy, on the Iraq war?
Immediately on assuming office, begin the process of significantly drawing down not just our military presence in Iraq, but our economic security blanket as well. We're propping up the Iraqi economy just as we are propping up the Iraqi government, to the tune of over $400 million every single day. I mean, just a phenomenal amount of money that we're spending over there. And this isn't George W. Bush's money. It's not Don Rumsfeld money. It's U.S. taxpayer dollars that are being used for this. And we have tremendous problems here at home. And that money, that $400 million a day, ought to be used to help our communities return to the American people so they can more properly educate their children, rather than using that $400 million to provide schools for Iraqi children, to build bridges in Iraq, and to provide the prop up or basis for a sound economy in Iraq. That's improper. It needs to stop. The Iraqi government is not going to assume responsibility for its own security, economic, or political affairs until we start removing that security blanket, which I think we need to do and would do as president to begin that process immediately on assuming office.
Bob Barr is Libertarian Party nominee for president. Bob Barr, lots of people want to speak with you. Let's go to Spring Arbor, Michigan, and Ben. Ben, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Mr. Barr. My question is to ask you about the Ron Paul movement. Frankly, we're fragmented. There's not much unity. There's a lot of people who want to vote for Chuck Baldwin of the Constitution Party, while many others also want to write in Ron Paul. What do you feel that you can offer to libertarians of the Ron Paul movement over Chuck Baldwin?
And what about Ron Paul himself? Of course, a one-time libertarian candidate, a surprisingly significant voice in the Republican debates this year. There's even been talk of you and he somehow teaming up before this whole show is over. Bob Barr, how about Ben's question?
Very good question. And, of course, we invite people to go to bobbarr2008.com to find out more about both my platform and positions as well as that of the Libertarian Party. And if they do that, or, for example, when I speak with folks, whether it's in Michigan, where your caller is from, or any other state, what I emphasize very honestly is the fact that if, in fact, Ron Paul's supporters that are out there in large numbers, and Ron Paul is a good friend of mine. I served with him in the Congress. I stay in touch with him on a regular basis. If, in fact, there are, as there appear to be, a large number of Ron Paul supporters out there, first of all, there is absolutely nothing that should attract them or draw them to the Republican or Democrat nominees. With regard to differences between myself and Chuck Baldwin and the Libertarian platform, which I support, and the Constitution Party platform, my programs and platform and that of the Libertarian Party clearly are in the mold of Ron Paul for dramatically smaller government and greatly enhanced individual liberty. While there is overlap with the Constitution Party platform, the Constitution Party platform is, one can look at it, and I don't denigrate them, but it's a fact, is a very religious-based platform and program. Mine and that of the Libertarian Party, we certainly, personally, I do recognize religion. I'm a Methodist, but that should play no part in a party's platform itself. And I think that's perhaps the main difference between the two-party platforms.
There's a lot of buzz out there about some kind of collaboration between your candidacy and Ron Paul. A call recently by Paul supporters for contributions, financial contributions, which from all the numbers I see you can use. Is there some collaboration possibly on the horizon between Barr and Paul?
Ron, as I said, is a good friend, but he continues to be a very active Republican member of the House of Representatives. He has his own race in his district in Texas. I maintain contact with Ron. We talk regularly, but I certainly can't speak for him in terms of what he intends to do and how actively he might be involved in our campaign or any other. I think it would be very inappropriate for me to comment on that.
Sounds like a maybe, not yet. Who knows? Let's go to Ron in Charlotte, North Carolina. Ron, you're on the air with Bob Barr.
Yes, Mr. Barr. Hello. How are you today?
Doing just fine. Thank you, Ron.
Okay. Now, what is your take? First of all, I'd like to say that I'm gratified that you've moved somewhat to the center. That's a position I hold. I am a lifelong Democrat who is a centrist, but I appreciate the fact that that you've taken a stand in protecting the Constitution against what seems to me to be presidential extra constitutional measures. My question regards FISA and the retroactive immunity. Portions of FISA.
The immunity given to telecommunications companies who cooperated when the president asked them to eavesdrop.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Is that not, to some extent, form of ex post facto law under Article 1, Section 9 of our Constitution?
Bob Barr?
Very, very good question, and it's one of the primary reasons why I've been so openly opposed to the Protect America Act, or whatever name they give it, to these recent Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act amendments, and that is to grant, in this case, both retroactive immunity to the telecommunications companies that apparently violated both the law and certainly the privacy rights of their customers in allowing government access to the records of their customers and allow the government to listen in to conversations of U.S. Citizen customers in this country without court order, as well as it grants a prospective, in other words, future immunity. I think this is very, very bad public policy and could very well be an ex post facto law in contravention of the Constitution. And I suspect that it will be, if it is passed by the Senate. The House has already passed it, and the President signs it, as I'm sure he will. Hopefully it will be very seriously challenged.
Bob, you led the impeachment charge against President Bill Clinton. If you were still in Congress today, given what you've outlined here, given the record of infringements that you're describing as you describe them on the U.S. Constitution, would you be part of, might you be leading an impeachment charge against President George W. Bush?
I would certainly want to be and would anticipate being a part of a very aggressive effort to get to the bottom of these issues, such as the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, what appear to be abuses, such as the firings of U.S. attorneys in the last year and a half. Not so much, or not at all, because they represent the power of a president to hire and fire appointees in his own administration. That certainly is beyond question. But if, in fact, for example, one or more of the U.S. attorneys that were fired by the Bush administration under Attorney General Gonzales, where that action was taken in order to obstruct or delay an investigation, or in or because a U.S. attorney was not moving forward, or they wanted a U.S. attorney to move forward in, with an investigation and they wouldn't. These are very clearly matters that that relate to fundamental public policy and legal issues and ought to be inquired into. The Congress, and this is mystifies me under under Democrat leadership since the 2006 elections, has refused to aggressively pursue or really pursue at all getting to the bottom of these issues to determine whether or not there are impeachable offenses. They've not even taken the very first steps in the direction of inquiring into these issues and gathering evidence through proper oversight of the executive branch. And this reflects a fundamental problem with modern Congresses under Republican or Democrat, and that is they simply don't have the stomach or the understanding of the proper oversight role the Congress is supposed to carry out.
But when you look back now on your impeachment effort against Bill Clinton, in relative scale and substance and significance compared to the kinds of charges you and others are leveling against the Bush administration, do you feel like you wasted your ammo there? Were you firing at a pretty small target in the Lewinsky scandal?
Not at all. The issues were very different, but the principle is very much the same, and that is a president, as a high public official, must be held accountable to the rule of law. And in the case of President Clinton, while the laws that he was impeached for violating, that is the laws against perjury and obstruction of justice, are very different from, for example, the possible violations of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act or some of these other issues that the Bush administration may be guilty of, the fact of the matter is that that does not make the obstruction and perjury, which President Clinton committed, any less important. I think it's very, very important for the American people to know that their public officials, particularly as high in office as the President of the United States, will be held to account to adhere to the law, whether that law is a law relating to national security or a law relating to the integrity of our court system, such as laws against perjury and obstruction of justice.
We just got 20 seconds before the break. Obama's in your state, Georgia, today. How do you see this race? Do you see McCain with a chance to win?
This is going to be a very close race. We intend to play a very key role in the eventual outcome and to help define the issues and to open up the political system this year. I think the time is ripe for it. The American people are going to demand real change, real opportunity.
I'm Tom Asbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with former GOP firebrand, now Libertarian Party presidential nominee, Bob Barr. Let's go to Joe in Framingham, Massachusetts. Joe, you're on the air.
Hello, Tom. Hello, Hi. Mr. Barr. Pleasure Hi. To talk to you both.
Hey, great. What do you
Thank
know,
you.
Joe?
Mr. Barr, you when you were in office, you supported the build-up to the war, the invasion of Iraq, and now you're against it. You know, where did everything go wrong? You guys had the Congress, you had the presidency. Newt Gingrich recently wrote in his book Real Change that you squandered the power that you had, and that you kept thinking is minority party. You know, what went wrong? What would you do to reverse that? And would you become a Republican again if that were to be reversed?
Bob Barr.
First of all, the Republican Party of 2008 shows no indication or inclination at all to revert to its former, you know, more conservative, pro-constitutional, pro-liberty roots. So I'm not anticipating that that's going to happen at all. with regard to as you've just described, Newt Gingrich's position that the Republicans lost their majorities and lost their way because they continued thinking as a minority party. Not quite sure what that means. In my view, what happened to the Republican Party, and it began long before they lost the majorities in the House and Senate in 2006, the problems can, I think, be traced very clearly back to 1998 when the Republicans passed, right before the 98 off-year elections, a bloated spending bill that was just every bit as laden with pork and special interest monies as what the Democrat majorities had done before them. What undid the Republicans was the fact, not so much the fact that they might have thought of themselves as a minority party, but they began to think of themselves and really consider themselves the government, the power. They began to think of themselves more in terms of being the institution of government and needing to protect themselves, by protecting government and growing government, as much more important than the philosophical basis for what got them to the Congress and what they had early on promised to do. They became the status quo. Then we had the election of 2006, in which the Republicans lost their majorities, as they very much deserve to do. And what did they do? They turned right around and put the very same people that had engineered their defeat that year back in positions of leadership, and they're still leading the Republican Party. So it's really no wonder that the Republican Party of 2008 has no more vision or agenda or platform out there on which to present coherently to the American people than did the Republican Party of 2006. And this is one of the reasons why the Republican Party's numbers are so low. And it's also one of the main reasons why I think there is a real opportunity here for the Libertarian Party and for Bob Barr's candidacy. As you know, we lay out in our website, bobbarr2008.com, and as we've been discussing here, I think the American people really are ready for a party and a platform and a candidate that aggressively pursues and commits to the notion of rolling back this massive government structure and the institutions that both of the major parties continue to support. It's not just the Republicans, it's the Democrats as well that are doing this.
And Bob, let me ask you about that. And on the libertarian front, I mean, yes, we can see a lot of resources that many people might say have gone in bad directions. Plenty of fat out there. On the other hand, there has been the concern that government has been very ineffective where it was needed. We saw what happened after Katrina. We see the energy crisis we're in the middle of right now, where there's been so little leadership that, you know, everybody's taking it on the chin with all the oil importation we're having to do and the prices of that right now. We saw it in the banking mess, where it looked like a lack of oversight, a lack of regulation has led to this subprime mess that's dragging down maybe the whole economy right now. So what's your justification for just smaller government? Maybe we need better government. Maybe we need more effective government.
The problem, I think, Tom, is the fact that we see government failing in these areas time and time again, whether it's Katrina, the financial scandals dating back to the savings and loan debacle of the 1980s and 1990s, the mortgage crisis. Time and again, we see government failing, and it's not simply that government is not doing these things that it ought to be doing well. It's that by its very nature, government is not equipped to do these things, cannot do them well.
Government or Republican government? Some would say it's Republican disdain for government, often expressed by this president, that leads to sort of undercutting its very effectiveness. The kind of people you put in, the way you think about it, you can end up with a simply incompetent government.
Government, by its very nature, is incompetent, and this is one of the things that our founding fathers recognized, and why they were so careful to provide very limited authorities and countervailing authorities and powers with our government institutions. They recognized this. Every time the government tries to interfere in the economy, for example, or tries to involve itself in something that traditionally and is better handled by private industry, private charities, or whatnot, it does a poor job of it.
Do you think the market economy on its own is going to solve the energy crisis and its attendant environmental crises that we appear to be in the midst of now?
certainly it can solve the market crisis out there. If we simply allow the market to operate for companies and entrepreneurs to start drilling in areas where we know there are natural gas and petroleum resources.
But the most forward-looking entrepreneurs have said we've got to get the government to give them some kind of base price on oil so that they, you know, aren't vulnerable to fluctuations when they go out looking for energy alternatives. They need to know that it wouldn't flop all the way back to 30 at some point. For years we've heard them say this. Government hasn't done it.
And for years they haven't done it, and it's not going to work. What we need to do is we need to start getting government out of the business of trying to manage the economy, manage sectors of the economy like petroleum, and let companies, let the private marketplace do this. There are literally trillions of barrels of oil in the shale deposits in the mountain western states, Colorado, for example. It is more difficult to extract those than traditional oil reserves.
And you got to strip mine much of the West to get it, right?
No, you don't have to strip mine much of the West to get it. What you have to do is there are different ways to do it. One way is to subterraneously, not by strip mining, heat that shale so that the oil comes to the surface, or not to the surface, but can be pumped out like more traditional oil. No, it's not a matter of completely stripping the environment. We also know that there are very large deposits of oil off the outer continental shelf. It's very expensive, certainly, to extract those. But the fact of the matter is, the marketplace will address that and take care of it. I think Americans have presented with either having less gas managed by the government at a cheaper price or more gas and other petroleum for their uses as much as they need at a higher price. I think they would take, particularly those of us who remember the government mandated rationing in the 1970s, would much rather have the gas and pay a higher price for it than not have it and eventually pay a high price anyway.
Let's go to Bernie calling from Boston. Bernie, you're on the air with Bob Barr.
Hi, Mr. Barr.
Hi there.
I just wanted to ask you. I'm a libertarian myself, and you said you wanted to play a key role in this upcoming election. Just thinking through the net effect of your presence in the race, if you draw votes away from John McCain, the net effect of that will be to put a socialist in the White House, and the effect on personal liberty with the judges he's going to appoint, and with him unchecked with Democrats in control of Congress, it seems like, it doesn't look like such a good outcome for libertarians.
Bernie, you're calling Barack Obama a socialist there.
Yes.
Bob Barr, what do you say?
I say that unless we as libertarians and liberty-loving Americans, even many who might not consider themselves libertarians with a large L, need to once and for all stand up for and do what's right and stand up for liberty and freedom. Otherwise, we'll just slip further and further away from it. First of all, on the judges that Bernie mentioned, judges that Senator McCain, if he were to become president, would appoint, it's not at all clear that they would be of a libertarian leaning or so-called conservative philosophy at all. His judges almost certainly would be predisposed to uphold such legislation as McCain-Feingold, which is certainly not respectful of the Constitution. His judges also, because this is an important part of his philosophy, could be expected to support warrantless wiretapping, which he supports, and other executive branch powers, I believe, in contravention of the fabric of our government. He's very much in the George W. Bush mold of unfettered executive power. With regard to Senator Obama, I certainly have my disagreements with him in terms of big government spending, socialized medicine, for example. But with regard to individual liberties, even though, unfortunately, he has not maintained a clear position against the expansion of wiretapping under the FISA amendments, I think in that area in particular, he would be much more prone to support liberty and support privacy and individual freedom than would Senator McCain's nominee. So it's very much a mixed bag, but what we're trying to do in the Libertarian Party is wake Americans up to the fact that as long as they vote for or support only the two-party system, they aren't going to have change. These are status quo parties. They both support the institution of a large federal government, And the only way that we're going to get away from that and begin that process is supporting the Libertarian Party and this cycle, Bob Barr's ticket.
Let's get a call from Washington, Iowa, and Susan. Hi, Susan. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hi.
I have two questions. I understand that the Libertarian Party stands for less government, but I'd like to know where you stand on two issues. One is the American Civil Liberties Union, and two, something we don't hear so much about, but I wish we did, comprehensive immigration reform. Thank you.
Bob Barr.
Thank you, and I appreciate Susan's call. As a native Iowan, I was born in Iowa. I always like hearing from folks in America's heartland. With regard to the ACLU, I disagree with the ACLU on some issues, and I'm very supportive of their efforts in others. As a matter of fact, I worked as a consultant with the ACLU on privacy issues regarding the Patriot Act, scaling it back, and scaling back these wiretapping proposals for several years after I left the Congress. With regard to immigration reform, I think Susan has really put her finger on something that's very important here, that's very difficult to get the two major party candidates to be pinned down on, and that is immigration.
What's the Libertarian position?
The Libertarian position is to secure our borders. It is definitely a fundamental responsibility of government to protect the sovereignty, protect the borders, protect the country. We need to institute and put much greater resources into border control to assure ourselves that everybody that seeks to come into this country poses neither a security nor a communicable disease threat, a health threat to this country.
What about guest worker program? What about those immigrants who are already here illegally?
What we should do is to make sure that they understand if you are caught, and it is against the law to knowingly hire illegal aliens, if you are caught, you will be deported. It's not a question of might be, you will be deported. I do not believe it's feasible or advisable to try and round up all the illegals that are here in this country. That would require such an oppressive law enforcement presence that I think Americans wouldn't stand for it, even though it sounds good to talk about from time to time. But what we need to do is to make sure that we leave no stone unturned to ensure that everybody who seeks to enter the country does so lawfully, no matter how long it takes. If they have to wait in line for 5 days, so be it. They submit themselves to a basic background and health check.
Drug war. You were huge for it. Now you're against it. What happened?
What happened is part of it is practicalities. We have spent tens of billions of dollars, hundreds of billions of dollars over the years since the 1970s especially, fighting the so-called war against drugs. It has not worked. I think a basic tenet of both libertarian government as well as conservative government, for those who call themselves conservatives, should be to say, look, we've tried this. It doesn't work. We're simply continuing to waste money. Let's look for different alternatives. What we need to be doing is going after people who commit violent crimes for whatever reason, those who would take away by fraud or artifice people's hard-earned money and their resources and property. That's what we need to be going after, and completely shift the federal effort. Leave these issues with regard to drug usage up to the states. That's where these issues used to reside. That's where they ought to reside. We need to start returning power to the people, and you do that by beginning to get power out of the hand of the federal government. And the drug war and going after states that have decided they wish to decriminalize marijuana or recognize medicinal marijuana is not an appropriate use of federal power.
You've been in politics for a long time. Give us a little political analysis here. Where do you see the Barr Libertarian campaign doing best? What states and what impact might you have on the general election? Can you flip Alaska, will you, to Obama, Colorado, Georgia, New Hampshire?
Well, we are, in fact, in the process through our campaign team headed by Ross Perot's former campaign manager, Russ Verney, of identifying both those states in which initially we stand the best chance of boosting our numbers. Alaska is among them. Georgia is among them. The Mountain West states are among them. Some of the Northeast states where there's a strong independent/libertarian philosophy and history and movement are those that we will anticipate initially focusing on. But we, starting out this race, you know, there was a recent Zogby poll that had me polling at 6% nationally.
Yeah.
That's very strong, very early in the campaign season here. You know, we view that as something not as a ceiling, but very much a floor to build on. And there are a number of states where we anticipate being able to do very well.
Bob Barr, joining us today from Atlanta, Georgia, Libertarian nominee for the presidency. We'll be watching and tracking. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Tom, it's a real pleasure. Thank you. And again, urge people to go to our website, bobbarr2008.com, and look forward to being with you and others on NPR in the future.
I think they got that website loud and clear. Thanks a lot for being with us. Listeners, you can continue the conversation and download the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. On Point is produced by Julie Jopp, Ping Wong, Eileen Amata, Stefano Katsonis, Hillary McQuilkin, Tanya Rally, hello Sabine, James Ross, Karen Schiffman, and John Wibby, with help from Will Roselip and Samina Udine. Our senior producer is Wen Stevenson. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.